Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, August 16, 2019. Sudanese opposition coalition select a prime minister.
If the parties have the political will to restore peace in the country and not to squander this opportunity for peace, it's for them to sit down, iron out these key issues as quickly as possible and with the deadline.
And South Sudanese leaders face a looming deadline to form a new government.
He has in his hands now the responsibility of a collapsing economy. Shortages everywhere. You find queues in bakeries, you find queues in gas stations, you find queues in transport stations and in banks.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Sudanese Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition has named its candidate for Sudan's prime minister in the upcoming transitional government. Mohamed Abdallah Hamadok, an expert on African economic affairs, will serve for 39 months before the country holds national election. Some Sudanese say while they think Hamadok is the right person for the position, he faces many challenges. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Mohamed Abdallah Hamadok is the former Assistant Secretary General for the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. He worked as an economist and expert on public sector reform, governance, regional integration, resource management, democratic governance, and electoral assistance for many years. From 2003 to 2008, Hamadok worked at the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance and later served as Chief Economist and Deputy Executive Secretary for the Economic Commission for Africa since 2011. Hamadok holds a PhD and a Master's of Arts from the School of Economic Studies, University of Manchester, United Kingdom, and a Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Khartoum in Sudan. The opposition coalition announced Hamadok as their candidate for the prime minister last night. Hamadok would lead a slightly more than three-year transitional government in Sudan. Abdallah Ramadi, a Khartoum-based economist, says he has never met Hamadok, but given his credentials, he believes Hamadok is the right choice to lead Sudan for the next 39 months.
He has in his hands now the responsibility of a collapsing economy. Shortages everywhere. You find queues in bakeries, you find queues in gas stations, you find queues in transport stations, and in banks as well, which is a shame.
Ramadi says the collapse of the Sudanese economy is not due to lack of resources, arguing Sudan is full of natural resources that could lead the country down a path of rapid economic development if properly utilized.
Prices are soared up in Sudan, not for economic reasons, but because of mismanagement of the economy, because of exaggerated government spending on politics and politicians, which led to hyperinflation, and that's why you find prices rising continuously.
Sudanese journalist Shuhdi Nadir believes the choice of Hamadok for prime minister is a blessing for Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Nadir says Hamadok should be ready to face the numerous challenges that lies ahead of Sudan.
For the past 30 years, Sudan has been spending much of its budget on war. Corruption has been spreading within government institutions. There is a lot that needs to be done to reform the civil service.
Nader says if Hamadok is able to restore peace in the conflict-affected regions of Darfur, southern Kordofan and Blue Nile, he will have a good chance of preparing the basic foundation for the real economic development in Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
In South Sudan, the parties to the South Sudan Revitalized Peace Agreement are left with 3 months to form a transitional government of national unity. The warring parties requested a six-month extension of the deadline in May. Joseph Madak Bothwell is a former senior government official who just returned from South Sudan. Wall says the parties to the peace agreement should come up with plans on how to address the sticky issues of security arrangements and the number of states in South Sudan.
But what I know, there are efforts being exerted at the regional level, IGAD level, and at international level, the UN level, that the parties should expedite implementation of the agreement, and particularly the issues of security arrangements and the issues of the 10 states, or the issue of the states for that matter.
Talking about the issues, the sticky issues, the boundary commission and the security arrangement, you have been in Juba and you know the issues very well. Are you hopeful that a government of national unity will be formed by November 12th?
Those two are primarily the key issues. If the parties have the political will to restore peace in the country and not to squander this opportunity for peace, it's for them to sit down, iron out these key issues as quickly as possible and beat the deadline. If you ask me how.
Exactly. I was going to ask you, because this political will has become the buzzword among the politicians in Juba. The IO, SPLM IO, Loyal to Riek Machar, has been accusing the government of not having a political will. And the government has been saying, look, we are ready to implement this peace. We want support from the international community. So now, which political will are we talking about here? Who is not having a political will?
The issue is not an issue of money. The issue is primarily saying, I'm willing to address this in this manner. I'm ready to build confidence and trust in this manner. Must have a clear plan that will be acceptable to the observers, the IGAD, and to the international communities. The international partners are concerned. That's why you see them contributing, yes, on a humanitarian basis. Yes, they are also supporting the sensitization and mobilization activities. Yes, they also continue to support the cantonments currently. And I see that this is also a big contribution. But what is missing is what I'm saying, the political decisions with respect to, let's do it. The South Sudan has money. Are the money being utilized properly to implement the agreement? Is there an accountability?
Now,
these are the issues.
Yes. We get a lot of news from Juba, and some of these news are not encouraging. And you just came from there. Is there anything that I did not ask you that you would like to add?
One of the things that I would like to add that people are not hearing is what the peace agreement, the peace deal that was signed on the 12th of September 2018, beginning with the process in Khartoum and culminated into an agreement signed in Addis Ababa, have brought a relative peace in the country. I had an opportunity to visit places like Payindjar County in Unity State, former Unity State. I've seen how people are moving. I have also heard about the movements of the IDPs from the UN camp in Bantiu, visiting their rural areas, and also is starting to cultivate with this rain season, which is the first thing after 4 years of this crisis. If you go to Juba, there's also a relative peace. The issues of unknown gunmen have subsided. This is also, the contribution goes to the work being done because of the peace agreement, and also because of the UNMISS and other parties who are also helping. The civil society organizations are raising awareness and campaigning, and the parties are also sticking to the agreement on the cessation of hostilities. We have seen that happening. I think this is the news that seems to be being missed out. The issues that are currently on top are how do we fully implement the agreement, particularly on the issue of the states and the issue of security arrangements.
That's Joseph Madak Bothwell, a former senior government official who just returned from South Sudan. Wall was in the camp of first Vice President Taban Dengai since 2017. Yesterday, he told this program that he has defected to join Riek Machar. He spoke to me from Toronto, Canada on Wednesday. As the deadline for completing the implementation of the peace deal approaches, Civil society activists in Juba say they are worried about what they see as a growing mistrust between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. The activists say the IGAD Council of Ministers meeting in Addis Ababa next week should focus on fostering political trust between the two leaders. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Edmond Yakani, Executive Director for Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, says messages coming from certain leaders within the government and opposition parties are disturbing and do not promote peace. Yakani says as the November 12th deadline for forming the transitional government quickly approaches, civil society activists fear both sides will fail to take the bold step needed to complete security arrangements and other aspects of last year's peace deal. He says the failure of a recently proposed face-to-face meeting between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar in Ethiopia is a clear sign that the trust and confidence gap between the two principals is big and may be widening.
In the real sense, as civil society, we wish to see the principals attending the meeting, but we have sort of started getting information that some of the principals, like His Excellency the President, is not attending the meeting. Our appeal is that we need to see really the principals attending the meeting, because the history of peace mediation in South Sudan is that without the meeting of the principal, breakthrough is a problem.
Yakani says South Sudan's politicians are frustrating efforts to restore peace in the country. He says rather than spend money on political activities, the government should be funding pre-transitional activities, especially security arrangements.
The soldiers are ready to contend. They're ready to come together. But for them to get the money to come together require political decision. And the politicians diverting money for their political rallies rather than really giving money to the soldiers to come together.
Lona Merekaje, a member of the South Sudan Civil Society Task Force, says it will be a big mistake if the parties move ahead and form a unity government in November without completing crucial security arrangements as is stipulated in the peace agreement.
There's no shortcut in establishing Afrigonu come November 12th without putting necessary security arrangements in place to make sure that all the actors come to Juba to form the government. I think if the government or if the parties are not able to establish Afrigonu come November 12th, then it's important for them to tell the people of South Sudan that they need more thinking, they need more brains, they need more effort.
And Merica just says the parties have failed to implement other pre-transitional activities as well.
There are some aspects of the argument that I believe should have been implemented without necessarily using money. And since it's not being implemented, I am questioning the political will of all the political actors involved in this agreement.
Jamet David Kolok is executive director for local NGO Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance.
If we don't see resources being injected out of, for example, the 100 million that was promised, then we wonder what level of commitment the parties actually had when they accepted to extend this period. So truly speaking, it is going to be very challenging if this process is not achieved.
Kolok says he believes the parties won't be able to meet the November deadline for completing pre-transitional activities. But he says South Sudan's leaders should have another plan to secure the peace process from falling apart. Kolok says the government should work to achieve the bare minimum, which he says is establishing a unified force in South Sudan that provides security guarantees for the principals to come to Juba and start the transitional government. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, government officials move to demolish illegal structures near Juba International Airport. We'll bring more on that coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time you were nervous?
It's when I sat for a secondary school certificate. Because I was fearing for my result not to come fail, because it will be shame to me.
The last time I was nervous was when I was expecting my firstborn daughter. The mother was quite not strong enough. So we were there waiting with the doctor I was actually in Nairobi and my wife was in Khartoum.
For me, when I was nervous is when my mom gave birth with operation in the hospital, because I thought I will lose my mom if the operation failed. But thank God it went well.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA. South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Authorities from Juba City Council and Juba State have ordered the demolition of buildings constructed on road reserves south of Juba International Airport. Juba State Minister for Physical Infrastructure says the apartments, restaurants, and houses block plans to build a bypass near the airport. Lasuba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking to reporters yesterday, Francis Waka, the Jubek State Physical Infrastructure Minister, says authorities issued the demolition order after some owners of buildings built on a road near the airport resisted earlier calls to peacefully vacate the area.
We have created a bypass. I have there. Also, we have difficulty. People build on the road. The actual work has started, but we cannot go ahead because people are impeding us from going. Do here, because this side here, because people are refusing us to remove the obstacle on the street. So we have to bring them because they are the authority, so that they give the order immediately, and then that gives us an access.
The bypass, located behind Crown Hotel, will link the Gabat area just east of the airport to the ministry's road in order to reduce traffic on routes leading to the airport. Swaka says work will widen the airport road. He says some buildings will either be demolished or have their wall fences broken down to make room for the extension. He says the illegally constructed buildings not only hinder the bypass, but also cause flooding in the area as they were erected on a waterway that connects to the River Nile. Thik Mayardit is the deputy mayor of Juba City in charge of infrastructure development.
No, anybody is above the law. So when we are going to start, the law will be in our hand. And all the police will be with us. So that anybody which is resisting and is just on the place of the government can be taken. Because this is for the benefit of the population. It's not our benefit.
The buildings earmarked for demolition are marked by the letter X in red. At least a dozen buildings, including an unfinished three-story house, are scheduled for demolition. John Chol, who owns a two-bedroom house and restaurant next to the three-story structure, says his house is also marked for demolition, but doesn't know when that will happen.
It is the first time we are hearing this. The houses are marked, but we were not informed when the demolition will take place.
Gabat area residents who live east of the planned bypass welcome the move. They say illegal construction has caused a significant amount of flooding, especially during the rainy season. Area Chief Mohammed Hamid Said supports the bypass.
This is good, and this is the kind of development that will make people happy in the country. As in the area, we are badly affected. Our cupboards and everything else all got destroyed because of flooding. This is a real river. It is just that the government has not come to see us house to house.
Magdalena Kiden Dario, whose house is underwater, says sanitation in the area is horrible, as sewage from the hotels often washes up into her house when it floods. The sewage problem hurts the country's image, especially when foreigners visit the area, according to Kiden.
We were terribly affected, and if they open the road, our place will be okay. This road is the main road which must be constructed, because if you see Crown Hotel, it's bringing many people from outside. And if they see the road is not good, flooded with water everywhere, and it's dirty, it tarnishes the image of this country.
Thick and Swaka both say the demolition will begin next week as planned. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Unprecedented power failure that has gone on for nearly 2 weeks has brought businesses, media, and hospitals in Cameroon's capital to a halt. The government has ordered the electric company to restore power within 7 days, but the company says it needs at least 3 months to repair equipment destroyed in a fire. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
This loud noise from a standby generator is unusual in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. But for the past 2 weeks, many locals have become familiar with it. The power supply disappeared on August 4th, the day a fire ripped through the city's main power station, destroying much of the equipment and leaving more than 1 million people without electricity. Henry Nda, manager of Divine Finance, a bank in Yaoundé, now relies on the generator to keep the lights on and computers running. But this source of power is unreliable because at times, fuel stations cannot supply enough gasoline to keep it going.
We cannot adequately operate. We use the generator and it goes off, and it is weighing negatively on us. And our customers, our members keep complaining.
The power outage has paralyzed businesses, crippled hospitals, affected the water supply, and forced people to dispose of huge quantities of perishable goods. Radio and TV stations cannot have regular broadcasts. Godlove Ndifonta, a researcher, says even the internet supply is no longer regular.
It is horrible. I am on my mission almost 24/24. Preparing my projects and responding to mirrors from my partners. I have to go to where there are generators in order to pay 500 francs to charge your machine or to charge your phone per hour.
Cameroon's Minister of Water and Energy Resources, Gaston Elundu Esomba, says the government is taking steps to replace all of the damaged equipment and will import parts from abroad as needed. Communication Minister and government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says power is being rationed and urged people in neighborhoods without electricity to be patient.
The government wishes to laud the patience, understanding, and civic sense showcased by the inhabitants of the capital city. Instructions have been given to INEO to provide a general calendar of the rationing power supply to the public of the city of Yaoundé.
Authorities have not identified the cause of the August 4th fire, although they refuted newspaper reports of sabotage. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's now time for our listener comments. We received a lot of comments from some of you this week on our WhatsApp line. A listener calling himself Emmanuel De Wise from Yambia writes, "What I like most about VOA is that it is bringing facts to the people on the ground. And I'm also suggesting that the time be more than 30 minutes because VOA program is enjoyable. VOA team is doing a great job." A listener who does not tell us his or her name writes, "I'm grateful to be part of this forum. I'm a Ugandan, but listening here in Torit, Eastern Equatoria, I appreciate your accurate and reliable news." Clement in Juba writes, "Hello, thanks for this WhatsApp number. I feel grateful to be able to finally be part of your programs, especially South Sudan in Focus. I can now comment on important issues using this platform." Another listener who says, "Call me Paul Banyi from Wulu County, Western Lake State." He writes, "I want you, the people of Voice of America, to update me about the latest news." And Tahrir John, a student in Uganda, writes, "Good morning, South Sudan in Focus. I'm a South Sudanese studying in Uganda. I love your program." Bedali Hillary from the Democratic Republic of Congo writes, "Many thanks for your program. What pains me is the banning of the South Sudan national anthem. To me, this shows the failure of the government to implement peace agreement. Johnson Tahas writes, "Good evening from Juba. These days, I'm very happy with the security situation in Juba City. We move freely at night. No more disturbances from the unknown gunmen like last year." Another listener writes, "Hi, VOA, South Sudan in Focus. I'm Patrick from Gudele. I always listen to your programs. Thanks for keeping us informed." Akera Giftson writes, "Thank you so much, Radio VOA. The mayor of Juba City is killing businesses by collecting taxes. There is rubbish collection tax, mayor's tax, rental tax, business tax, which is according to the size of your store, trading licenses, and work permit." Tong Guang Julius writes, This city council is a disgrace to the community. They are good in collecting taxes without providing services." Thank you for your comments. We look forward to hearing from you. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We look forward to hearing more from you. Garang Kot Garang writes, "The government or security apparatus should work hard to make sure the perpetrators of the incident that left a student wounded at University of Juba are apprehended and brought to justice." Finally, we heard from Obwal Musa William from Juba City, South Sudan, who says, "It's my pleasure to be part of this great platform. Bravo, VOA. My message is to our leaders. They should not be like the Bourbon monarchs in Europe between 1814 to 1848, who learned nothing and forgot nothing."
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And that's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Bondo Circuit. This is my favorite song by John Frog.
Sack, there's old Kabir, Indu BA, Ubenum Firafuga, Ubisim Marabay, Ubenum Pi Hotel, Devinia Sukar, Vite Zubayaba, Dewele Sukar, Vite Sukamama, Yaboba Ajuz, Ubumasa Karem, Galurua Fi Dubai, Jarawen Fi Bodele, Dezol Lagatiza, Jarawen Luchatan, Dewele Toronto, Yawinaka Monaz,
Bundo Sack, 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 Bundo Sack.
There's all the wheel,
Bundo Sack,
Kabir Wawir,
Bundo Sack,
Baku Lukatir,
Bundo Sack,
Galabuto Wazir,
Bundo Sack,
Ubi Jaffi Kalab. Oh, mind you, the deer. Oh, the jibin yabba bay. Oh, mind you, the rear. The old little tin. Why, ya, Liza Gali.
We have been listening to John Frog with the song Bondo Circuit. John Frog, I'm not Bondo Circuit. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for join us on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Bondo,
sack, wello, sack, wello, sack, wello, sack.
There's all Casalan,
Kundo Saka,
Ukaman Palasan,
Kundo Saka,
Bakul Bejaran,
Kundo Saka,
Uleyom Sakaran,
Kundo Saka,
Gali Sultan.